Hello, Billy Patterson here. Nearly 30 years ago on my Castaway programs, I talked with local people about their lives. Stay tuned and listen again to the following fascinating story.
Hello and welcome to another Castaway, the program where we take a well-known person and we deposit them on a desert island, a tropical island, and we find out whether they can fend for themselves. We give them six records to take with them, two of their favorite books apart from the Bible, and one luxury. And this week, our castaway, I'm very delighted to welcome indeed, is a famous man in convoy. He's a master tailor, and his name is Paddy Hoey. Paddy, you're more than welcome. Now, I usually start off, Paddy, by asking people when and where they were born.
I was born in convoy. December 1910.
What about, Paddy, your father? The name Hoey is not a local name, is it?
My people came originally from Ahearn, County Tyrone. I think probably the name was known as Huey. It's U-E-Y.
And just was changed to Hoey somewhere along the line?
Changed, probably some school teacher probably changed it. And calling the roll, or had written the name.
Right. Paddy, right back, were you one of a big family in convoy, or were there just a few of you?
Just one. I'm the only one that's alive. The others died at birth.
Really? How many children were all together, Paddy?
There were three more, but they all died at birth.
Did they? Tell me about convoy, your earliest memories of convoy.
Well, the convoy of my early days didn't have, for start off, any street lights, no footpaths, two pubs, two or three shops. Thomas Holmes and Company were the general grocers, hardware, coal, etc. For entertainment, in the early days, we'd look forward to George Bell's travelling show, which came to the Green. The Green that is opposite, is backgrounded by the Church of Ireland. And there on October nights, George used to have the gun, bagatelle, raffles, etc.
Where did this man come from?
George Bell came from Ballybuffet.
And what is this sort of a show was this you're talking about, Paddy?
It was just
amateur drama or something, is it?
No. No show. Nothing like that.
What was it?
We had guns. He had guns. A shooting gallery.
Oh, that sort of show. Right.
Shooting
like
gallery.
A fairground.
Exactly, yes.
Oh, I get it.
Right. Also, there was a brother and sister, Johnny and Maggie Barr, who had swing boats. In an odd night, Johnny wouldn't turn up, and if any customers asked where was Johnny the night, Maggie, Johnny, of course, was in the pub, and Maggie would say, where would he be? Only in the hell house. Also, flax grown in the area gave a lot of employment.
It was very big, and you're talking again about 1920s. Right.
It reached its peak during the First World War, and it fell away after that. It was a great source of employment, because people were employed pulling the flax, steeping it in dams, where it stood in the dam, for 9 to 10 days. Water was released. It was a great source of pollution in those days.
And terrible pollution.
Lint water. But I'd venture to say that it wasn't as great a source of pollution as what silage effluent is at the present day.
Serious.
Because the lint water was over and possibly a month could clear it. Whereas silage could go into the river any time for even 6 months at a time. But
flax was the big industry in Convoy at that time.
Yes. And then, of course, the woolen mills, who at their peak would employ anything from 400 to 500 men and women.
Mm.
They came long distances from Drumkeen, Glenmaquin, Cardone, Raphoe, Balnalacky, and they all came on bicycles from that distance. Wet or dry, they would have pushed bicycles in. A boy or a girl starting work in Convoy at the age of 14 could earn, their wages were fixed. The fixed wage was 7 and 6 a week.
37.5p, isn't it, about now?
Yes, 37.5p. That would be the wage today.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for young people the present day to even consider that as any sort of a wage.
But no, it was fair. I mean, it was fair in those days as well, when you think about it. Or maybe it wasn't. Could I interject now? We'll go back to that. I want to talk a little more about the woolen mill in a minute. Could I ask you, you know we're giving you 6 records. Could I ask you what your first choice to take with you would be?
Well, I'd like The Lark and the Clear Air.
All right, you shall have it. It's sung here by Patrick O'Hagan.
My soul soars enchanted as I hear the sweet lark sing in the clear air of the day, or a tender beaming smile.
A very nice rendition there in part of The Lark and the Clear Air, sung by Patrick O'Hagan, Johnny Logan's daddy, we were just talking about there.
Go
back to the mill a minute. You were telling me all about the mill. Paddy Hoey, by the way, is my guest if you've just joined us on Castaway. And we're talking about Convoy Woolen Mill. You were saying the kids started about the age of 14 and they made 7 and 6 a week.
That's
37
correct.
And a half p.
That's right.
Convoy must have been a thriving wee town in those days.
It was. The remarkable thing about it, it never seemed to grow until comparatively recently. As a matter of fact, when the weekend came, most people would take themselves off to adjoining towns and villages. Raphoe profited a lot from this, as a lot of Convoy people would go to Raphoe on a Saturday night.
What did Raphoe have, Paddy, that Convoy didn't have?
Well, that's the remarkable thing about it. Raphoe didn't seem to have anything, nothing in the way of jobs, until recently again. There was no industry in Raphoe, and still they seem to be able to live as well, if not better, than Convoy that had an industry.
Mm.
It was a remarkable fact that there were better shops in Raphoe, great shops like, he could have great dripper shop.
Yeah, Moffat's
in Raphoe, for instance, where people came from all over East Donegal.
Mm.
Of course, Strabane. Donegal was the hunterland of Strabane. People always went to Strabane for anything they needed.
So Convoy didn't profit then from all the people who came
Certainly
to work?
Certainly didn't, to the extent that it should have.
Who owned the woolen mill in those days, Paddy?
Well, it was the weirs of Ballandrit who started the mill. In actual fact, I've heard it said that Convoy was only second choice. They were going to start the mill, on the banks of the Thin, and at Castle Thin. Only they couldn't come to an arrangement with a landowner there. But they did start in convoy.
It was a fluke that they started in
that
convoy.
It was a fluke, really.
So go back to those days again, and entertainment-wise, we had a very famous priest there, because I had him on this program. Father Tommy. Aye, you were telling me about
but
him.
Prior to Father Tommy coming to convoy, we had our own dramatic club.
Oh?
In them days, it's different from now. Now you've only to turn a knob for to get the best. And the entertainment world, bring it to your own fireside.
Mm.
And those days we had to look out for ourselves.
Mm.
And we had a, well, it was a fairly good dramatic club, because we produced sometimes definitely one and sometimes two plays a year. Comedies like Paid in His Own Coin, Love and Land, and one-act comedies like The Coiner. And we won the Fish Cup and Letterkenny with The Coiner.
You were an active member, Paddy?
I was, aye. I did character parts, mostly.
Drama has always played a good part in the life of villages and small towns in Donegal, hasn't it?
Drama
has always
did.
Been a wee club.
Drama played a big part, but... And there were some great dramatic clubs. Ballybuffet now had a great one.
Still do.
Under the late Anthony Timoney, who was a schoolmaster there. He was a great producer. And won the Fish Cup on numerous occasions. That, by the way, has dropped away. Fallen away, rather. There's been no Fish Cup in Letterkenny for a long number of years. It was catered for drama for amateurs.
I'm going to ask you what your second piece of music, your choice to take with you to the island, would be.
And Fania Gallanley.
Fania Gallan Lay there. That was a wee bit of the great old tune, and it was sung there by John Kerr. If you've just joined us on Castaway, my name is Billy Patterson, and my guest this week is Paddy Hoy. Paddy, we're talking about convoy in the old days, and now we were going to talk about Father Tommy, who played such a big part in the life of the community in those days. Father Tommy Doherty.
For his stay in convoy, he was the life of the community. He came... And during his stay in convoy, we had some of the great travelling shows that came around, such as Abs and Pringle, Louis Dalton, and that great Shakespearean actor, Anu McMaster. There were special matinees for college pupils during McMaster's stay in convoy. They came to see Hamlet, The Merchant of Venice, King Lear, etc. Then Father Tommy started pictures in the hall. He got an operating box built, and on occasions he had all the great pictures of the time, such as The Dead with Their Boots On, and The Sea Wolf, and Gentleman Jim. also great westerns. He has been known to leave convoy in the morning, drive a car to Dublin for a film, and be back in convoy in time to show that film at night.
He was keen,
When you think of it nowadays, with the cars that they had available and the roads, it was no mean feat for to do that.
No, you're right. You're right.
But you
were telling me also, Paddy, about a couple of the people who were seeing films for the first time.
Yes.
There's one old fella you were telling me about.
There's one old fella, and he used to wander about the roads, and Father Tommy thought he'd be better inside on a cold winter night. So we told him to come in, and he was sitting this particular night watching. There was a supporting film, which on this occasion showed a girl dancing. She was very scantily clad, a few feathers here and there. Father Tommy, when he was passing, wondered what the old fellow's reaction would be. So he says, "What do you think of that girl, Tom?" Well, Tom slitted himself up and he said, "A right lass, Father, if she had her outside clays on." On another occasion, an elderly man who was seeing his first picture, it was one of the great pictures of the time, and prior to it, there was also a supporting, there was a cartoon, a Mickey Mouse cartoon in this case. And Father Tommy asked him, "What did you think of the picture?" And the old fella says, "It was all right, Father, but do you know, I would just as love hear the wee mice."
Mickey Mouse had a fan even those days. Have you any more stories from those days, Paddy?
Well, in those days, the government of the day decided that all entertainment was to be taxed. A tax had to be paid on sixpence or over, provided there was 1,000 or more people in the area. Convoy came under that tax bracket, but Father Tommy had no intention of paying any tax, so he charged fourpence to get in to the pictures, which of course wouldn't pay even in those days.
Mm.
But to overcome the difficulty, there was a table near the hall entrance on which stood a box.
Mm.
And everyone was expected and did put something into the box. And that difficulty was got over.
Very good. Very clever. Right, Paddy, could I ask you, you know this island we're going to send you to?
Yes.
What would be your third choice of record to take with you?
She Moved Through the Fair.
She Moved Through the Fair. Let's have it.
My young love said to me, "My mother won't mind, and my father won't slight you for your lack of kind." And she stepped away from me, and this she did say: "It will not be long, love, till our wedding day." She stepped away from me,
to the fair and fondly I watched her move here and move there, and then she went homeward with one star awake as the swan in the evening moves over the lake.
She moved through the fair. That was sung by Robert White. Now, Paddy Hoey, the master tailor from Convoy. Tell me a little bit about tailoring, Paddy, your lifetime profession. How did you start?
Well, when I went to the trade first, I went to serve my time, Henry McNulty's Ballymathay. There were three, in them days, were four or five men and two girls working in the shop.
I never knew that girls worked in a tailor shop. Never.
At least one of those girls could have made a jacket as good as any tailor ever did.
Never knew it.
And the men, the daily paper, of course, came into the shop. And the apprentice was expected to read the paper, if the man hadn't time to do so. If they made any mistakes in pronunciation, etc., they were quickly corrected.
So let me get this right here a second, Paddy. These men were sitting around, all cross-legged.
All cross-legged.
All cross-legged.
On a bench.
On a bench, up high, off the floor, on the bench.
And they...
Sitting on a table, sewing away.
The pressing was all did on their knee as well.
Go away.
They did the pressing with on a lap board, as it was called.
They did all the pressing on their knee as well?
Yes.
So you spent your life sitting up there like goblins on a toadstool?
That's it.
And you got the apprentice to come in and read you the paper?
The apprentice, he read the paper. And those men most of them were clever, and they were well abreast of affairs. They could discuss anything from world politics to horse racing. And we had an odd man on the road column. These were the journeyman tailors. They were called tramp tailors by the countryman. And they were highly skilled and clever craftsmen. And while they went on the occasional skate or binge, I never once heard any coarse language or four-letter words coming from them.
So, let me get this clear now, Paddy. You had not only the tailors who were established in business, in their premises, in a town or a village, but you had journeymen tailors who took their business to the farmer in the remote area.
They were mostly local tailors.
Were they?
From, like old Francie up from Drumkeen, who would, indeed I met him myself with the lapboard through the handle of the iron, going to a farmer's house where he would stay for a week and make clothes for everyone in the household.
But where did the material, for instance, for the clothes come from?
The clothes?
Aye.
The farmers in those days, when they clipped the sheep, they would send the wool to be made into cloth. And a place that seemed to specialise in the making of this type of cloth was Lisbellaw in County Fermanagh. But on one occasion, a farmer went to a local tailor and he got cloth and all from the local tailor. But he came back complaining afterwards. And the tailor said to him, "What was wrong? Would it not keep out rain?" And the farmer says, "The uncloth," he says, "that you sold me wouldn't keep out hailstones on top of rain."
And I want to find out, Paddy, what your fourth choice of record to take to this desert island would be.
Well, could I have Abdullah Bulbul Amir?
You certainly could.
Very good.
The sons of the prophet are brave men and bold and quite unaccustomed to fear. But the bravest by far in the ranks of the Shah was Abdullah Bulbul Amir. The heroes were plenty and well known to fame in the troops that were led by the Tsar. And the bravest of these was a man by the name of Ivan Skivinsky Skivar. One day this bold Russian had shouldered his gun and donned his most truculent sneer. Downtown he did go, where he trod on the toe of Abdullah Bulbul Amir. Young man, quoth Abdul, has life grown so dull that you wish to end your career? By Linfidel, no, you have trod on the toe of Abdullah Bulbul Amir.
That's a very nice version of Abdullah Bulbul Amir, sung by, of course, Brenton O'Dowda.
Brenton O'Dowda.
Percy French's great song.
Right.
Paddy, these boys were called, the journeymen tailors were called what, whipping?
They went around the houses whipping the cat, as it was called.
Whipping the cat.
And the definition of it is probably, could be either of two, that when they would go in to the farmer's house, they would sit on the hob.
Hmm.
And if the cat was there before them, they would whip the cat off the hob. Of course, it could also mean that when they were sewing, that the thread that they were using, they would whip the cat with the thread, probably. Could have been.
So these guys were called, are you whipping the cat these days?
Yes.
Right? So off they went, they were making clothes in the farms. Well, we were trying to reckon why they did that, and you were suggesting that perhaps he had his model there all the time.
Yes, I would say that was one of the reasons. And also, they got fed in these houses. In a lot of cases, they slept on them until they were finished, whether it was a week or a fortnight.
What would it cost to make a suit in those days, Paddy?
Well, now,
a good suit, a Sunday suit.
A Sunday suit, when I was working, and when I started on my own, actually, a suit would cost somewhere about £5. That would be in the 1940s. And
a three-piece suit?
What would be that? A three-piece suit. There was always a waistcoat with it. Mm. As a matter of fact, Billy, your own grandfather was a tailor, Matt Patterson of Letterkenny.
He was indeed.
Aye. So I would say £4.10, £4.50. Now, from that to £5.50.
Mm.
And an exceptional good suit in the 40s would be somewhere around £6.15.
Mm.
But talking of that reminds me, I've gone up Letterkenny Street one morning when I was working there in McGriffin's, and there was a draper's shop called Crearn's on the main street, and I saw in the window a three-piece suit that was reputed to have come from Russia at the time. And the price of the three-piece ready-made suit was 19 and sixpence. And when I went down to Mick Griffin's, Mick also had a draper shop as well as the tailoring. On his wonder was the same suit, but it was marked up at £1.
Uh-huh.
I told him when I went in, I said, there's a fellow up the street undercutting you.
Sixpence.
Sixpence.
Talking about money, Paddy, what were you paid as a tailor before you started to work on your own behalf?
Well, you got so much. You were a piece worker. You got so much for a jacket and so much for the trousers.
Like how much? Your earliest days.
Well, now, you'd be lucky even in the 1940s to come home with £2 or £2.10 a week. You had good wages.
Right.
Because way back in those days, and we'll talk about earlier days now.
Mm.
I remember in convoy where the pastime for lots of people was pitch and toss with pennies. I remember this fellow, he was McBride, emigrated to America afterwards. I remember him giving me 2 shillings. That would be 10 pence today's money. And sent me down to the village for 12 packets of woodbine. The woodbine was in fives, wee small packets of 5 in each packet. Mm. And he got the 12 packets for 2 shillings.
60 cigarettes for 10p.
2 pence a packet.
My goodness.
Remarkable.
It is remarkable. Pitch and toss seems to have been a universal game, Paddy.
It was a universal
game. All over the place. All over the country place. That was played, I remember.
That's right, all over the place. Yeah. Well, this particular toss pit was held at near where the Presbyterian church is in Convoy.
Yeah.
On the Letterkenny Road at the bridge.
Yeah, I know the place, yeah.
It was frowned on, of course, by the authorities, but they were pretty lenient and they didn't bother them very much.
Oh, it was pretty harmless occupation.
Harmless occupation.
A bit of fun for the boys.
That's right.
But there wasn't an awful lot more. Not an awful lot more happening.
Not in those days.
No. Well, you were telling me earlier that in those days when you were a boy in Convoy, there wasn't even gaslight. Is that right?
Oh, no gaslight. Just only recently we've got any light in Convoy, street lamps in Convoy at all.
Right. How
over the last 30 years or so, or even less.
So it was all, in those days, horse-drawn vehicle. You had the occasional car.
Oh, there were cars, yes.
Who had the first car? Boyton, was it?
Boyton, of course, had a private car, but the first hackney car belonged to the late Sam Ash. His son is still in Convoy there, George.
Yes.
But he had a man called Neely who drove the car for him. Mm. It was an old brass-fronted Ford.
Mm.
Well, after him, of course, the two McClures, James and John, had hackney cars.
Yeah.
Well, go to a football match on a Sunday with footballers now, that is. That's the first GA club was started in Convoy. We would have paid our own way, of course. We went to Killigordon, Castlefin, Ballymafay. There were 6 in the car.
Mm.
Each paid a shilling.
Mm.
When we went to Letterkenny, 6 in the car, each paid 1 and 6 pence. That was what the hackney car cost.
Right. So you filled it up and paid your share.
That's right. Everyone paid their share.
Yeah. And Convoy, very quiet little town in those days.
Very quiet.
Very quiet, yeah.
As a matter of fact, I had men working when I started up on my own who had been all over the world, actually. Some of them in America and England.
Mm.
And one man especially said that Convoy looked more like an English village than an Irish one. For when the pubs closed, the street would be cleared of people inside of 3 minutes. There were no hanging around corners or anything. Mm. Like you might have seen your own place for a foe, for instance.
Your fifth choice, Paddy, of music to take to the island with you would be what?
Mary from Dunloe, please.
And you shall have it. It's sung here by Kathy Harrop.
Now fare thee well, sweet Donegal, the Rosses and Guidall. I'm crossing the main ocean where the foaming billows roar. It breaks my spend many happy days. Farewell to kind relations, I'm bound for America. Oh, then, Mary, you are my heart's delight, my pride and only care. It was your cruel father who would not let romance makes the heart grow fond, and when I'm o'er the main, may the Lord protect my darling until I come home again.
That was a little bit of Mary from Lunlow, sung by a very pretty New Zealand girl called Kathy Harrop. Did you enjoy that version,
Very
Paddy?
Nice.
Yes,
very
good.
Nice.
Who were the big families in Convoy in your day?
Well, of course, Convoy was famous not alone for its cloth, but was also famous for its crows, remarkable thing. Or probably they should be called rooks.
Uh-huh.
And the yarns told of an old fella, an old farmer actually, down around the Ballandrit country, who was reputedly a very early riser, but his workmen couldn't be blamed for getting up too early in the morning. But this particular morning he was out, and he could be heard saying, "Huh, by gum, you're so early on the road. Hey, you're not, my men's not up yet." And all the way from Convoy to, as it discovered, he was talking to the crows. These same crows, another local character said, talking about a stormy night, and he said that he remembered the wind was that high, he said, that whenever the crows were coming home to their roosts in Boyton's Wood, they had to walk up Convoy Street.
Too windy to fly.
Too windy. And I think it was the same character that said...
Are you talking... Is this Paddy Rooney now we're talking here, no?
No.
All right, another character. Go on ahead.
Another character. Right. The same character that on the dry summer that he dug the well.
Oh, yes.
And he dug it in his own garden. And he said he dug it 5 foot deep.
Mm.
The next morning when he went out, he said there were 6 foot of water on it. And of course it wasn't always Boyton's. That was the Montgomerys, who are a very famous family and I believe related to the late Field Marshal Montgomery.
I believe so, yeah.
And one of them was killed when fighting in a battle out in Canada, and another one of them later number, there was a Colonel Montgomery among them who was famous. But during the 1798 rebellion, the British didn't trust this Montgomery fellow at all. They thought he had leanings towards the rebels.
Yeah.
They employed a lot of people, Montgomerys, and Young, he was a famous English author, when visiting Donegal in 1780-something or 1790, he records that when coming through Convoy, he met Montgomery's men on horses bringing in the harvest. They used to bring in turf, and when I was a nipper, there were two entrances to Boyton's. Oh, by the way, Boyton's, the reason Boyton's came into it, the local Church of Ireland rector married one of the Montgomery women, and hence the name Boyton came into the... to be called Boyton's.
He was the Reverend Boyton, was he?
He was the Reverend Boyton. Mm. And
right. You were talking about the back entrance. Two entrances.
There are two entrances. Mm. The first, the carriage entrance. And the second, when I was an upper, it was called the Hack Gate. And I, them days, thought that it meant a hawk gate.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, it was an Irish name. And Hack meant manure. And that's the gate that was used for taking out the manure to the fields from the stables.
I see. Right. So it was a hack gate.
A hack. Mm. Convoy, in fact, of course, Conwy, the Gaelic speaker still calls it Conwy, which is the Plain of the Hounds.
Why is it called that, Paddy?
The Plain of the Hounds. Well, I reckon that it must have been where they coursed, where the game was taken in from the hills. It would be all wooded in those days.
Mm.
And the game would be taken... pushed down from the hills and coursed down on the plain, which Convoy is a plain.
That's interesting. No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So when you're talking about game here, you're talking about hares and rabbits?
I would say mostly deer in those days.
Deer.
But of course, with the wolfhound, the Irish wolfhound, of course. Well,
go on ahead.
When talking about tailors, they were known by their nicknames.
That's right. That's what I was going to ask you, because very colourful characters, weren't they?
They were very colourful characters. Mm. One of them was called Sticks, because he was tall and thin.
Yeah.
And he had a Cockney accent.
Yeah.
He acquired this Cockney accent from a sojourn in the British Army during the First World War.
Mm.
And there was another fellow called the Beezer. He was from Strabane. One case in point of the Beezer, he was in this pub, and he asked some of the boys around, "Where's that barman from?" And your man said, "He's from Dungiven." "Well, Joe says, he's Dungiven me anyway." Another one of them was known as the Draperstown Express because he came from that town in County Derry.
Yes.
And there was another one of them called Nosey. And Nosey was reputed to know all the tanner priests. A tanner, of course, in those days was sixpence.
Mm.
And the half-crown priests, that would be 12 and a half pence now. Apparently, he knew these men to touch them, you see.
Right.
Some of them would give him a tanner and others would give him a half a crown. But it was reckoned he knew all the tanner priests and half-crown priests.
And he was called Nosey because he knew them, not because he had a big nose.
Well, I think the nose had something to do with it. And the Archdiocese of Armagh, he was reputed to know them all.
Is that right? The priest was always a soft touch.
Always a soft touch. Mm. He couldn't refuse.
Right.
But, of course, not to say that all the tailors on the road would touch the priest. They wouldn't, indeed. As a matter of fact, Nosey was looked down on by the rest of the men because of his mooching ability.
Yeah.
They didn't do things like that.
Right.
From among themselves, surely, but not to outsiders.
Right, okay.
Aye.
Yeah. An honourable bunch of men with a code of ethics that they stuck to.
That's right. They stuck to that code.
Mm.
And, yes, they were great characters, definitely.
Paddy, you have seen a lot of changes from being a young man. You spent your life sitting up on the table watching the world go by outside and just hearing it from the young fella reading the newspaper to y'all.
Well, that had sort of dropped out in my day when I started up.
Did it?
So it was only when I went to serve my time myself.
That's right, I get it. Right. After that, of course...
That was my job, reading the newspaper.
You were the young fella.
I was the young fella then.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the radio, of course, arrived.
Oh, yes. Radio, surely.
And then later on the TV.
Not too many radios either in the early days, you know.
What is it like now for a man who has a bespoke tailor? In other words, you made the clothes personally for the man at the time.
As far as that's concerned, I think that's out.
It's all gone.
Even the ones that are supposed to be making bespoke, in fact, the most of the clothes are being assembled, the same as Ford started assembling the motor car. Whatever little bit you'd be working at on the first day of January, you would still be working at that bit on the last day of December.
So now you have specialised and nobody makes a complete suit anymore.
Nobody makes a complete suit anymore. They wouldn't know where to start.
I see. So that's the way it has gone.
That's the way it has gone.
Yeah. Is there much work for tailors now? Not a lot.
Not a lot, but there's plenty of work, alterations and things like that. Mm. As a matter of fact, a man now who was quick at alterations could make more money at alterations than he could...
As a tailor. Mm, that's amazing. Well, you have somebody that you wanted to tell me about.
Oh, I have indeed.
Well, you better tell me about it.
One of the great characters around Convoy was an old photographer known as Charlie McDade. And Charlie was reputed, at least he said so anyhow, to have been around 40 of them... 48 states in America. He used to... one grouse that he had, perpetual grouse it was actually, was Irish weather, the rain. And he said, as regards the weather, rain in this country, "Oh yeah," he says, "it may hesitate, but it never stops." And he said everything was wrong in this country, upside down. even referred to the burial service, where he said, where some clay was sprinkled over the coffin, and the clergyman said, "Remember, man, that thou art dust, and unto dust thou shalt return." McDade says that was all wrong. I ain't seen dust in this goddamn country this last 30 years.
Not much dust around in
Not
Ireland.
Not much dust around. And on one occasion, after he came here from America, he was, of course he was born in Ireland, but he came back after a number of years in America. On one occasion, it had rained for a solid week on him. And he went into a draper's shop. He had got as far as Castle Derg. And he bought an umbrella, a raincoat. And he put the raincoat on, and he put the umbrella up, and he looked up and he says, "Let her die now, you son of a so-and-so."
He was ready for it. Paddy, I've got to take you briefly and quickly onto this desert island now.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to deposit you on a desert island.
Right.
We're going to give you the Bible, and what two books of your choice would you take with you?
Well, for preference, my first book would be A Man May Fish by the late Kingsville Moore.
Right.
He was a famous fisherman. He was also a judge of the Supreme Court.
You've been an angler all your life?
All my life,
right.
Yes.
And your second book?
The second book would be Guerrilla Days in Ireland by the late Commandant General Tom Barry.
Good reading.
Good account of what it was like in the fight for freedom in 1920-21,
etc. Right. A good historical, accurate thing, you think?
And straight from the shoulder, no
punches pulled, as you said earlier, yes.
That's right.
And one luxury that you might take with you to this island?
I'd have to take the old fishing rod with me, because it would help to supplement the diet if there's nothing else.
Well, it would, all right. Well, you're going to have some nice exotic fruit grown on this island. Would you be all right on your own? Could you manage?
Oh, I didn't see any reason why I shouldn't.
You're handy enough with the hands.
I could make a cup of tea, or coffee, as the case may be.
Provided you've got some.
There wouldn't be very much else going to loss on an island like that.
Okay. Paddy, you enjoyed your life as a tailor?
Oh, yes.
Good
Still
man.
Enjoy it, surely.
Good man. That's
I'm
great.
Looking forward now to the 1st of March when this salmon fishing starts on the Finn.
Good man. Well, not too long to go. What would now be your last record as we deposit you on this desert island?
We should finish up very appropriately with a Sky Boat song.
Paddy Hoey, Master Taylor, thank you very much indeed for being our castaway this week.
All right, Billy.
Speed, bunny boat, like a bird on the wing, on with the sailor's cry. Carry the lad that's born to be king over the sea to sky. Loud the winds howl, loud the waves roar, thunderclaps rend the air. Baffle our foes, stand by the shore, follow they will not dare. Speed, bunny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry.